Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
You may not know Glenn Ballard, but you do know Glenn Ballard. For Glenn is a songwriter, a lyricist and producer who's worked with some of the biggest names in the business, including Quincy Jones, Michael Jackson, Aerosmith, Anastasia and Alanis Morissette, with whom he co-wrote Jagged Little Pill to great critical acclaim and commercial success. And did you know Jagged Little Pill celebrated this year its 25th anniversary? Still an extraordinary piece of work. His latest project sees him team up with Damien Chazelle, amongst others, for The Eddy, which centres on a jazz club in contemporary Paris. Now, not only was the Netflix series Glenn's brainchild, but he also wrote all of the songs for it, with composer and pianist Randy Kerber. Now, we'll hear plenty of those shortly, but first, some news about a new podcast I'm working on in partnership with BMW. Now, where soundtracking allows me to explore my love of music and film, I am thoroughly enjoying putting together Play Next, a new weekly podcast bringing you the best of pioneering up-and-coming music artists. Now, in each show, I play you a fantastic selection of tracks in their entirety that I can't stop listening to. We focus on a different, innovative, exciting artist each week, and we also wanted to address and discuss some, well, really fascinating and important topics surrounding the music industry. So to do that, for each episode, I'm joined by someone at the top of their game in the industry to help me explore a range of topics, from the future of festivals to the process of making music or the most exciting emerging platforms. Listen and subscribe now on all major streaming platforms with new episodes released every Wednesday. Just search for Play Next. That's Play Next, a new podcast about new music in partnership with BMW, available on all your podcast platforms now. And so to Glenn and his hugely varied career. We'll begin with his title cue from The Eddy, performed by the crack jazz ensemble he and the team put together for the show.
Vortex of sound revolving around, dissolving you down to the essence of secret desires that a midnight inspires. Music will flow, canvas will glow, sweetest surrender, pulling you under the eddy.
How are you, sir?
Oh, good. Thank you. Thanks for taking the time.
Oh, you kidding? I am absolutely loving The Eddy. What a series.
Oh, I'm so glad you like it.
It's so addictive. I find that you kind of, you watch it and it just, it just entertains you so much. You feel so at ease with everyone, but then you just find that there's so much more unraveling as each episode presents itself to you. It's so brilliant. Congratulations.
Well, we had a lot of really talented people to make that show, and I'm just so grateful to all of the great talent that wanted to be involved with something as unusual as our show. You know, the whole concept of jazz in 2020. For a lot of people, jazz is something nostalgic almost, you know, and I thought as an opportunity to just remind people that jazz is alive, that it can be very vibrant and that it can be about looking forward and not looking back.
I think that the whole, the story in itself about the creation of the show is wonderful, you know, and the idea that, you know, you came up, well, tell me please about the kind of seed of this idea that you came up with quite a few years ago about this band and this story about these characters in Paris around the jazz scene. Where did the idea come from within you?
It comes from my love of great musicians. I've been fortunate enough to spend most of my life, mostly in Hollywood, working with some of the greatest musicians in the world, making records, movies, TV shows, musical theater. So the inspiration comes from my brothers and sisters who can really play. People who really know, who've dedicated an entire lifetime to learning their instrument or to learning how to sing, and then to go through the precarious journey of doing that to try to make a living from it. It's one of the hardest things you can do. So for me, this is just a love letter to the people who pursue jazz and who would do it in this day and age. You would have to do it because you love it, because you're not going to become famous. You probably won't make a lot of money from it. And so why would anybody do it? And so I just wanted to offer the idea that you do it for the love of the music, you know, you do it because you sort of have to. And for me as a songwriter, I've been doing this my entire life. I've been writing songs since I was a kid. This is all I know how to do. So for me, the idea of having a great band playing songs that I wrote is a dream come true. And that's basically my whole life is trying to find people who will play my songs, you know. So in this case, it was like jazz has sort of fallen by the wayside in terms of the mainstream, but it ever go away from my sensibilities, even when I'm doing a lot of pop music or whatever. For me, it's about reminding people that, first of all, when people play music together, there's something magic that can happen. The 100 songs that are on the top 100 right now, not one of those songs contains people playing music together, really playing together. It's machines, it's computers, and I'm very fluent with the computers now, but I much prefer playing music with other human beings, you know?
The physical thing, both in terms of as a player, what you feel, but also as someone who's watching.
It's greater than the sum of its parts when it's right. And there's no better example of that than a small jazz ensemble, because I just think a lot of young people have never actually been close to that. And for me, the idea ultimately for this show was to bring an audience into the circle of musicians who are making this kinds of music and to feel the energy that's involved with that and to feel the magic. So if you haven't seen a great jazz ensemble close up, it's like seeing close-up magic. It's like somebody who can do a card trick right under your nose and you have no idea how they did that. When you see the Eddie play live, it's kind of like that, because I saw it happen. I mean, listen, I've been working on this as an idea for about over 10 years, right?
Wow.
I mean, listen, I started my career as a songwriter and a producer working for none other than Quincy Jones, who is himself a jazz refugee. I mean, the first song that I really had recorded by a major artist was by jazz artist George Benson. And so I sort of got my start in a pop jazz way. And I've always wanted to find some way to use jazz in the current day and to not have it be something that you had to take a quiz to understand what jazz is. Have you done your jazz homework? Do you know who the greats are? I mean, I know all of that, but none of that should matter when you're listening to new music. And so for me, this was about offering all new jazz songs, a brand new jazz band, and it's the current day. And so that was always the concept for me. Growing up in Mississippi and Louisiana, I have about half of my background is French. So I've always had this connection with France. I've been going there since I was a teenager, and I started living there off and on in the 90s. Paris has always been open to all forms of counterculture.
Yeah.
I consider jazz to be completely counterculture now, because people barely know what it is. So in my years in Paris, I could always go to a jazz club, and there would always be young people in there listening to music. And I thought, okay, jazz is still alive. It's still alive in certain clubs in New York, in LA, and in Paris, of course. And so for me, the concept was, I knew that if I wrote a bunch of new jazz songs, I would just drop them into the ocean and they would sink like a stone. So I always knew I needed a narrative and a story to go with it. So when I started writing these songs 13 years ago, actually, it was always about a jazz club in Paris in the current day. And that's as much of a story as I had, but every song was dedicated to that sort of high concept. So all the references in the lyrics I wrote are streets in Paris, the Gare du Nord, where the Eurostar comes in, which I've taken like probably 200 times from between London and Paris.
Yeah.
Favorite trip, you know? So arriving in Paris at the Gare du Nord is like magic. So that's part of the subtext of the songwriting.
Smoke has cleared, even though you've disappeared. The fire's still hot, feel you in my back. It's a ray that I obsess, but this is one time I confess that I cannot get you out of my head. So supply the time that I'm referring to. Baby, you should know. Oh, when you bought the clock was chiming, chiming very slow. Then you let it go. There are no one-way ticket. Call me when you get there. If you wanna make it, there's a train, so take it to a rendezvous. I'll be waiting for us, open road for us. When I sing the chorus, I think of you so. Call me when you get there. Why don't you forget where I'll have got to know how sweet to see.
All these songs just existed as a concept of this band in Paris, and I just needed great partners to bring it to life. And boy, did I get lucky on that. Damien Chazelle, Jack Thorne, Alan Poole, Udo Benamina. I mean, the people who got attracted to this project got attracted to it because of the music. The music already existed. I think we wrote 60 new songs.
Wow.
I had 39 of them demoed, which I gave to Jack Thorne when he first got involved with the project. And Jack sat down, put on his headphones, and he wrote 8 episodes based on these 39 Eddie songs, you know.
Whoa.
So it's a very, very unusual genesis for the whole project, because we started with music, you know, and
yeah.
It's usually the opposite. Thank you. And we also started with this concept of we wanted to show an audience real musicians playing real jazz music and not do a kind of phony, you're faking it after the fact. So somehow we talked everybody into doing it that way.
It's brilliant because the music within the show as well, it has this life that it takes, the unexpected, you know, path, which is what I love about jazz. Is you know, you might be in a club and hear a band start to play up a song that you know, but it's never the version that you know, because every version's different. That's what's wonderful about jazz. And so when you hear the music within the show, and I think it's in episode 2 where Elliot's, you know, he's so frustrated and the band are rehearsing and he's like, no, faster, no, do it for, you know, up for whatever it is. My musical terminology is rubbish. But, you know, and so I love that element and the way that music has, you know, it's more than part of the narrative. It's more than a character. It has such a specific place within the whole framework of the show. And that's obviously because music was the complete start of this story. It's beautiful the way it just seeps out of everything.
Well, I just have Jack Thorne and Damien Chazelle to thank for accepting this whole kind of like box full of DNA songs that in some general or specific way related to the story that they wanted to tell. And I think ultimately it's a story of, it's a portrait of people who are passionate about what they do. It does happen to be jazz music, but it's really about a commitment that anyone would make to something that you do beyond some sort of monetary reason to do it. And it's really about passion. And if you don't have passion for this sort of thing, you would never be able to sustain the trials and tribulations, the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune that go into making jazz music, because the only reward really is the music itself. You know, you're not going to be held up in high esteem by the public because basically they don't know what it is. It's almost like this quixotic mission for people who still do this because you do it kind of in the shadows, you know? And so for me, the whole magic of getting close to a great group of musicians who are playing something that can touch you. Like you're saying, to hear a jazz band work through a song that you even know is kind of a magical thing, because you hear how they can deconstruct it and you can hear how they can go out on tangents and then somehow find their way back home, you know? And that's the most fun for me is that whole metaphoric journey of how a jazz song has a theme and then it has variations, but then you end up with the theme again. It's kind of like the way we try to approach the narratives.
Yeah.
The way Jack Thorne wrote it. I mean, all 8 episodes and all the outlines, Jack has always talked about the rhythms of the show and it wanted it to be more of a jazz rhythm. So he would say, this scene should play longer than you would expect, or this scene should play faster than you should expect. But he always had rhythmic sort of signposts in the script and in the narration. So really, I had the greatest partners possible to take something like this and bring it to life. I mean, Damien shot his on 16mm film. So we were doing live music on set, on film.
Wow.
And no one in any of the crew had ever done anything like this, because you'd never do TV this way. You know, mm-hmm. You would never do live music on television. You don't do it in movies either. You just don't do it because it's too hard, you know?
Unless you're Damien Chazelle. I mean, Whiplash was like, oh!
Unless we've talked Netflix into doing it this way, which they were absolutely so wonderful and accommodating just the concept, you know, of like, this is the only way we can really authentically present what a jazz band in Paris would be right now. This is the way we have to do it. And they went, you know what? You're right. Do it that way.
Amazing. What great collaborators to have on that side of things. But I mean, Damien's kind of passion for jazz as well. You know, I've been lucky enough to speak to him in the past, and whether that's, you know, with something like Whiplash or the kind of the character that he wrote for Ryan in La La Land, you know, in terms of how true and dedicated to jazz that character was as well. And you know, just from hearing you talk about it as well, that there's so many kind of similarities to someone who, you know, it's not about making money. He's not going to make money. He just wants to follow this path and be true and show his passion for this thing. Yeah, you really, like, that's really interesting you saying about the rhythm of the writing as well. I hadn't really thought about that, but now that you say it, it's like, yeah, I can totally appreciate that as well in Jack's writing.
That was the whole concept of like somehow integrating the way jazz is created and made and expressed, somehow finding the visual and narrative way to do that too. To remind people that, you know, basically a jazz person making jazz is a way of life. Their whole life is like jazz. I mean, you know, just how you get through the day and how you end up on that stage every night is a hell of a jazz journey, you know. And and especially if you're doing it in Paris and the parts of Paris that we were, which is sort of outside of the center and what we call, Damien and I always say, we're not going to show the jewel box and the jewels of Paris. We're going to go out further and show what's really happening right now, you know. And yet, the idea that people still want to make music that's individualized. The other thing I wanted to remind young people is that jazz music affords you the freedom as a musician that you can't find in any other genre. However, to sit at the jazz table, you have to be ready. You have to bring something to the table. You have to be able to play.
Yeah.
And that's a kind of an unusual concept right now of like spending 10 years learning how to play something so well that you can like scare people off. You're so good, you know?
And
jazz players want to have that kind of power. They have to be able to get up and shred and sort of like show everybody what they've got. And then you get an opportunity to really express yourself in a way that you could never do any other way. So it's a high cost to get there. But once you attain that kind of freedom as a musician, you can't go back, you know?
Where does your love of jazz come from, Glenn? When was it something that you really connected with, and were there particular players or you know, recording artists?
I played off the streets in New Orleans. Are you kidding? I mean, I grew up in Natchez, Mississippi. I spent every weekend I could get to New Orleans in New Orleans. And of course, it's the birthplace of jazz. And you can still find people playing music on almost every street corner in New Orleans who do it for the love of music and not for money. So I learned right away that music is part of culture, it's part of life, it's part of expression, and you don't do it for money. You do it for other reasons. And so having the rich background of real jazz of like was my inspiration always, you know. And I mean, I wandered into jazz clubs when I was 5 or 6 years old. I've seen things you should not supposed to see when you're a young kid. But that's, you know, New Orleans is New Orleans. And so you learn all kinds of things there as a young person, but it's very rich and it's very vibrant, and the music was everywhere. So I grew up with it. It's in my DNA. I mean, seeing second line parades and funerals is just part of my culture, you know?
Yeah. I remember being a really young kid and witnessing that on film in Live and Let Die.
Yeah.
remember just kind of going, wow, this is amazing. I want to be there. You know, it kind of had this, even the energy that kind of came through the screen when I was watching it as a really little kid sort of thing. But it was like, yeah, the kind of power and the energy of it was infectious. I really remember that was the first time that I experienced that, seeing that kind of thing. I've not been fortunate enough to visit New Orleans in person. It's on my wish list when we're allowed to travel again. But yeah, I've heard so many brilliant things about, you know, you kind of just walking through the streets and it's, you can feel it.
Well, in episode 3 of the Eddie, what we tried to do was connect, because it's an awake after one of our characters has been killed. Mm. So we thought, okay, let's make it a second line New Orleans procession that morphs into a kind of Moroccan jazz ethnic instrument kind of morph. So that's what we did in that scene. We start off with basically what would be a jazz funeral, and we created this music for that. And then we go outside and we morph into what that morphs into, which is what we're calling like North African jazz. And so that's one of my favorite scenes in all of the episodes, because we do try to connect the deep root of New Orleans jazz, a quintessentially American art form, but we're really trying to show that it's grown out of New Orleans, it's grown out into the world, and people everywhere are part of this jazz movement, and everybody's entitled to tap into that root. If you have the right spirit, you can play jazz, you know? And so we really wanted to show that jazz is alive and well, and it's certainly, it's got a huge influence from Morocco and Algeria, which those cultures are very much part of the French culture now, and we wanted in every way to show that that's a part of what is current French culture, and it's part of jazz culture.
And I think that really shows in the band as well that you've created for the show, in terms of that, you know, Paris for me has always been a fantastic example of multiculturalism. And first time I went to Paris and experiencing music there, it was kind of mind blown. It was brilliant. It was so welcoming and sort of inclusive. Was it easy to find your band, to kind of put these musicians together? What was the process of that, of finding the Eddie band?
Well, it was a deep dive. I mean, we have two original members from the original Eddie, which is our piano player, Randy Kerber, who's one of the great musicians in the world. And I've been making music with Randy for 3.5 decades. So,
wow.
I already knew that he was like the best piano player I'd ever been around. So I wrote most of the songs with Randy. He's the best piano player. I mean, he's played on half of the soundtracks in Hollywood that you've heard, you know, the Star Wars soundtracks, you know, Forrest Gump.
Wow.
Titanic. This is the guy playing the piano. That's our piano player, Randy Kerber.
Wow.
He's an absolute genius, the best sight reader you've ever seen. So he's our band leader, our piano player, and our original member of the Eddie, and also Ludo Louis, our trumpet player, who's also French, and who was in Lenny Kravitz's band for 8 years, and we poached him, and thank you, Lenny, because we love Ludo. Those are the two original members, but the way Jack Thorne wrote the rest of the characters in the band, he had very specific ideas. He wanted a female drummer from Eastern Europe. So, okay, that's very specific casting, you know. So we found her, Lada Obradovic.
She's so great.
get around to you.
Gossip.
They've got a lot to say.
Gossip.
It's just a game they play.
Gossip.
But they're like birds of prey.
She's Croatian, and she's an incredible musician, but she's also, as it turns out, a really fine actress.
Yeah.
And none of the musicians, by the way, had ever acted. So they were picked on the basis of their musicality and also their personality. But if you couldn't play, you couldn't even audition. You know, you had to be able to do it. Because we had some people who thought that they would be able to fake their way through it. And it was like, you'll be outed in about 3 seconds. In a jazz ensemble, if you can't play, you just can't play, you know, and it's like falling down the stairs. So we see that. We see you falling down the stairs. I'm sorry you can't play. So we did a deep dive. And we found Lotta, which was like almost impossible. Our bass player is a French Cuban. Our sax player is Haitian via Canada. Our singer's from Poland.
She's great.
Night will fall on my head again. Alcohol is all I let in. I'm not going anywhere soon. I'll chat with that card in the moon.
It is truly, and our piano player is from California, so it's the most international jazz band ever.
I love it.
All authentically real players, and they could just play their asses off, you know, and they became a real band. I mean, they had to play every day together, sometimes 10 hours a day, on set, live music, and they became my favorite band. You know, they can really, really play, and they're dying to get out there and play right now. The whole idea for this is that they'd be out there playing music for a lot of people right now as the follow-up to our series. This is what we're trying to show you. You know? We're all at home making quarantine videos, you know. We're making one right now. But, you know, we're dying to get out and show the world what a real jazz ensemble is. Just to remind people, yeah, here's 50 new jazz songs. Here's a great band. And you can meet them in our club, Call the Eddie. Just go to Netflix and watch it. So we're just waiting for the day when we can come out of the shadows and play again, you know?
Man, my dream is to get on Eurostar, come to Paris and watch the Eddy live at the Eddy. Please make it happen.
Can't wait for that to happen.
And listen, before I let you go, I just, you know, you're, I mean, we're just talking about one thing that you've done, and your career is extraordinary, and, you know, in terms of what you've done, and you talk about, you know, working with Quincy Jones and, you know, just the songs that you've worked on, whether that be writing them or producing on them, playing on them, it's just, it would take me days to kind of cite them all. And I spent, when I was kind of, you know, looking back at some of them, it was kind of like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my, and that one, and that, it's just, do you ever get the chance to just kind of take stock on kind of, you know, what you have achieved? And weirdly, we were with, you know, with lockdown, we're watching loads of films, and I rewatched Bridesmaids again recently, which is just, you know, if I want to laugh, I put that film on because it just makes me laugh immediately. And the way that they use the Wilson Phillips song, Hold On, which you wrote, is like, oh my God, it's like, yeah, it's just one of many.
I've just been lucky. I've been doing one thing my whole life, which is write songs and finding places to put them. So I look back every now and then, like this year, looking back at this record I did with Alanis Morissette, Jagged Little Pill, became a musical on Broadway. And it's a very powerful, very powerful show. And in fact, we were going great guns when the quarantine came. We hope that that one will be back the minute we can open Broadway up again. But
yeah,
that's something from 25 years ago that has found a new life again with a bunch of super talented people who took songs that Alanis and I wrote 25 years ago and turned it into a new expression. It's a really powerful show. So I'm so proud of that one.
Yeah.
I want you to know that I'm happy for you. I wish nothing but the best for you both. I know the version of me. Is she perverted like me? Would she go down on you in a theater? Does she speak like my name? And would she have your baby? I'm sure she'd make a really excellent mother.
And we were lucky enough to chat with the lovely Alan Silvestri as well, who I went and hung out with at his hotel in London with his lovely wife. And, oh, he was, what a gorgeous man he is. And he, at the time, so this is maybe a good eight, I've lost track of time with all this weird kind of, you know, being in lockdown. It feels like 2 days. It's been like 2 years. But you guys were just finishing off the Back to the Future musical. And he was so excited about this. He was so, like, his eyes lit up whenever he would talk about it. What a great thing to be part of.
Oh, my God. Well, We were in Manchester earlier this year, putting it on stage at the Manchester Opera House, and we actually started previews on February 20th. On March 11th, we opened the show, and on March 14th, we had to close. But I love the show, and I think for all of us who have worked in TV, movies, records, when you get involved with stage, with a musical theater, it's a whole other world of beautiful people working together. I mean, the collaboration involved with musical theater is, I think, for all of us. I mean, look, we spend a lot of time sitting in front of a computer as composers. Alan does it, I do it. But when we get in a room with 25 actors on stage and 15 people in the pit, and have an opportunity to work with them every day for weeks, there's nothing like it. And when you see the result every day, it's like building something that becomes more beautiful every day. It was great. So I think we have an incredible show, Back to the Future, and we will be back at whatever point we're allowed to. We're going to go back. It will be on the West End.
Great.
Sometime next year.
I'm there. Can't wait to take my boys to see it.
I think they'll love it. I mean, honestly, I'm so proud of the show. I think in this time where there's so much dissension and people are all upset, this is a show we can all agree is just a fun show, you know? And I think it's a fun night or afternoon at the theater whenever we can all sit next to each other again.
You know? Yeah. Please soon. Glenn, it's so lovely to chat to you. I look forward to the day when maybe, you know, the Eddie's in Paris ready to play a live show. I can come and we can pick up and do chapter two of chatting face-to-face about your wonderful career.
That would be lovely. And I look forward to seeing you in London.
Thank you, Glenn. You take care, sir. Be safe. Thank you and congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
I know there's pain. Why do you lock yourself up in these chains? No one can change your life except for you. Don't ever let anyone step all over you. Just open your heart and your mind. Is it really fair to feel this way inside? Till then, baby, are you gonna let him hold you down and make you cry? Don't you know, things will change, things will go your way. If you hold on for one more day, can you hold on for one more day? Things will go your way. Hold on for one more day.
As written by Glenn Ballard, that's Hold On by Wilson Phillips, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtracking with the hugely gifted songwriter, lyricist and producer, and just lovely bloke. My huge thanks to Glenn for taking the time to talk to us. The Eddie is available on Netflix now and is well worth checking out, especially if you are a lover of the genre. Even if you're not, check it out. It's awesome. Head to edithbowman.com to catch up with all of our previous episodes, including my conversation with Damien Chazelle and Alan Silvestri. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. We are at Soundtracking UK. And please do check out our YouTube channel where I put together a regular show as a companion piece to this podcast. And if you have a moment, well, I'd be delighted if you'd listen to Play Next, the other podcast I've just launched in association with BMW. A lot to ask, but hey, if you don't ask, you don't get. Next up on Soundtracking, I cannot wait to share with you my chat with the one and only Mr. Tim Roth. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then. In the meantime, stay safe.